oh my. Put me in, coach, I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, turn two, turn two, what it do? Win leagues, win leagues, catch out, catch out.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Turn 2 Podcast, brought to you by RotoFanatic.com and Underdog Fantasy. I'm your host, Matt Williams. This week, we're going to be taking a look at the first week of the MLB season. We are finally here, and there are games, real games being played, and we're going to go through maybe some streaming options, some start, sit, and the abbreviated four-game or three-game short week to start the season. I'm your host, Matt Williams. Joining me today from RotoFanatic.com, Mr. Paul Mamino, the brain behind the RotoFanatic Data Monster. What is up, Paul?
Not much, Matt. Just ready for baseball season to actually start. Feels like it was forever ago that we had last lineup decisions to actually make, and now I'm moving guys in and out every 5 minutes.
Yeah, and there's like freaking injuries left and right, and it's getting annoying, and I just can't wait. Opening day, like I always say, needs to be a national holiday. Everyone should be taking off. Everyone should gather around, watch baseball. It doesn't matter. It's like the NCAA tournament. It doesn't matter if you're a baseball fan. Yep. You fell out of bracket anyway. If the NCAA tournament comes around, same thing with baseball. It's opening day. Everyone should be watching baseball. So, getting into kind of the point of the show, I said we're going to be talking all about the first week. So, if you have some lineups to set come opening day, there's some decisions to make because a lot of teams are playing three games, a lot of teams are playing four games, and you have some decisions to make as far as hitters go. And then, obviously, starting pitching. Just because it's opening day doesn't mean every single starter is an ace. So we'll get into that a little bit. But before we get started, a word from our sponsor. Fantasy baseball is here, and you've got to check out these new best ball leagues on Underdog. Best ball is the ultimate test of your live draft skills since there's no in-season management. That's right. Draft your team, and Underdog automatically credits you with your best performing players every week. You don't need to play the waiver wire or worry about trades. It's just the draft. And who doesn't love drafting? There's only a couple of days left to do it, everybody. So jump in and do it now. In Underdog Best Ball, you can draft as many times as you want because you don't have to do any roster management. Saves you loads of time. Underdog's Best Ball leagues are drafting right now, starting as little as $3. Once the season starts, Underdog also has daily fantasy and an all-new pick'em game. So go download the Underdog app right now to get in on some best ball before the season starts. Enter promo code TURN2. With your first deposit, and Underdog will honor a money-back guarantee during your first month. Love Underdog or get your money back with promo code TURN2. So again, search Underdog in your app store and enter promo code TURN2 and get started immediately. All right, Paul. So let's talk about some news before we get into the meat and potatoes of the entire game. The first most interesting thing that I think took some people by surprise is David Price was put in the Dodgers bullpen. Which means, and they confirmed that it'll be Dustin May, not Tony Gonsolin, taking the reins as the fifth starter. Whether or not this is something that sticks long-term is probably small. You know, they have a very talented group of pitchers. Their entire bullpen could be a starting rotation for most teams. So let's just first start with Dustin May. He, in drafts here towards the very beginning of the season, he'll no doubt get a giant bump. A lot of people have been investing in him, hoping for this to happen along with Tony Gonsolin. So Dustin May, are you a fan? What are you expecting here? How many innings do you think he'll get to the fifth inning to get a decision? Your general thoughts on Dustin May.
I mean, most of the offseason, I was actually kind of anti Dustin May. I know I've talked to a few people about it on Twitter. I think last year I wrote one of my location reports kind of explaining why I didn't like him as much. But the big thing for him is no matter how, you know, nasty the sinker looks, and I mean, it looks like a wiffle ball. It's just not a pitch that's going to generate a lot of swings and misses. And he throws it over 50% of the time. He locates it down in the zone, which really isn't very good for whiffs. And I just don't see a huge jump in the strikeout rate coming, which will make him, you know, a better real life pitcher than fantasy. But to his credit, one of the things that's happened this that there's been a few videos of is he seems to be throwing a four seam up in the zone a little bit more. He only threw it 48 times last year. So that's 5% of his pitches. I mean, if he can throw that more up in the zone, he might allow himself some more strikeouts, which will kind of unlock some of that potential. And that, you know, that 100-mile-an-hour fastball that everybody falls in love with might actually become a pitch that he can, you know, get guys to swing and miss on. But the question for him is going to be the innings totals. And I guess early on in the season, they're going to roll with him. I think that this was probably the last guy I expected them to take. I expected it to be Price just because I don't think he wants to pitch out of a bullpen. But I'm probably not going to invest in May. I think other people, a lot of other people have it. And I guess 120 innings between, you know, each, he'll get 120. Gonsolin will probably get 120 and Price will probably get 120. That's going to end up.
All right. So yeah, we're talking about David Price putting the bullpen. Dustin May has been named the fifth starter for the Dodgers. You had mentioned about him being a pitch to contact guy with his sinker, is as amazing as it looks. I mean, Z contact, which is contact within the strike zone, 91.7% last year. That's a ton of contact with only a 4.8 swinging strike rate, which you don't necessarily need to hold against someone for a sinker. If you are looking to get contact, I mean, you're not going to get a lot of swings and misses, but there are plenty of sinkers in baseball with above a 4.8. You mentioned the four-seam fastball, which again, Z contact for that was 87.5, which is very high for a four-seam fastball because you said he threw it in the zone. Still had a 12.5 swing strike percentage though, which is actually decent for a fastball that was thrown in the zone that often.
Yeah.
So if he's going to start going outside of the zone, yeah, that could be very intriguing. So like you said, the main issue with him is innings, but he has the stuff to get more strikeouts, kind of like Max Fried, if he just travels outside of the strike zone a little more. But I'm not sure I have the faith in him because of the back end of that Dodger rotation, kind of you alluded to. There's a lot of options there. David Price is not built for the bullpen, I don't believe. May could have been there. I think he's a good choice probably to have moved in because Cody Gonsolin is, as much as I, and I think a lot of people believe, would be the best starting pitcher. If put in the rotation, he's also the best option for the bullpen. He's done it. We know he could do it. And that's probably why he's sitting there right now, unfortunately, for anyone who's a fantasy fan. But, you know, in the Dodgers, that's a good problem to have. So, yeah, if you drafted any of the three, you know, hold on to them. I wouldn't go out of your way to pull Dustin May really early in any final drafts, though. You know, just take them as you normally would because, you know, and you know, if you're super excited, good luck. But you know, there's some issues there beyond his control. Let's just say that.
And I think, you know, you kind of alluded to it in the open explaining it, but it might be better news for Gonsolin and Price in terms of getting wins if they're kind of the first guy out of the pen between, you know, limiting Kershaw and Buehler potentially early, or limiting, you know, Julio Urias, like, or even limiting May. Like, those guys might come in the fourth, fifth inning early in the season and steal a couple wins in a two inning outing kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And in speaking of maybe stealing a couple of wins, recently over the last couple of days, Randy Dobnak signed a extension with the Twins. It was like 5 years, $9 million, which, you know, it's not a mind shattering contract, but you know, good for him. I think he signed with the Twins for $500 a few years ago out of the independent league. So this is a huge deal for him. He doesn't have to drive around in his Uber anymore, which I know is the joke everyone's cracking, but it is awesome. He's currently not in the rotation for the Twins as they have Jay Happ, Michael Pineda, and Matt Shoemaker in there to back up Maeda and Berrios. But as we just mentioned with like Tony Gonsolin or Price being the first man out of the bullpen, he could be a sneaky guy to grab in drafts because of, you know, or off the waiver wire. You know, I know where a lot of drafts are already done or off the waiver wire, what have you, to try to soak up those wins because, you know, we don't know how many innings some of these guys are going to be going, especially early on. So Randy Dobnak, he's not another guy's not going to blow you away with strikeout stuff, but he's an intriguing low cost option that could be coming out of the pen to maybe soak up some wins. So what are your thoughts on Randy Dobnak?
I mean, I've been kind of letting, he has some loud proponents. You know, people who love him really love him. And as a result, he's getting kind of pushed up in drafts compared to other similar pitchers. I think like the guys with questionable roles that might not even be in the rotation to start. I think that, you know, Dobnak has shown in the past the ability to generate, you know, more whiffs than we think. He locates really well for it. Let me pull up the numbers exactly, but you know, he's a guy who has pretty good control, and that's part of what has been his whole thing. He's about, you know, 66th percentile in my expected whiff stuff. So he does, you know, locate well for it. He can generate some whiffs. And one of the things that he's done this spring training is actually kind of use the slider a little bit more to generate even more strikeouts. So there's definitely some strikeout upside, I think, a little bit more than we sometimes people give him credit for. But he's not a guy I've really been actively targeting, mainly because he's not in the rotation right now and he could steal some wins. But I like, I think Haps are relatively interesting. I've always liked Pineda. Shoemaker is probably the one he'll replace if he replaces anybody. But I haven't really been actively going after him.
Yeah, I'm speaking more to just the general idea of chasing down relievers that are not, or, you know, the starters that are not in the rotation. I mean, there's plenty of interesting ones out there, like you said. I mean, Tyler Chatwood, I don't know what his role could be on in Toronto, if he's going to be high leverage or maybe a first guy out of the bullpen for them. There's lots of interesting ways.
TJ Antone.
There's a lot of guys like that, but just because he was in the news and he has a cheering section, like you said, he may be more expensive than you want him to be, but you know, what can you do?
Yeah.
Shohei Ohtani is dealing with a blister. Blisters suck. Yeah. But you know, he's not Rich Hill. He doesn't really have a history of this. So if he's scheduled, I believe, to pitch Sunday, if I'm not mistaken, as I'm double checking right now. Is that something that is going to concern you with Ohtani coming right out of the gate?
I mean, I think I've mentioned it on a few podcasts. I have a lot of Ohtani ownership this year. But one of the things that I think is actually relatively interesting that I saw kind of before we hopped on is I believe they said that Ohtani is going to be in the lineup today. So, you know, he pitched yesterday. They put him in their lineup. They've been
Today. You mean opening day?
Yeah, or yes, whenever their next game is.
Yep.
You know, they have no worries about him hitting with this blister, which is almost a good thing for him, because if they decide to, you know, skip him as a pitcher, then that's awesome. But one of the other things that they've been doing is they've been actually, you know, actively letting him hit on days he pitches. Mm-hmm. And that might even bode well for him hitting the day after, the day before, something that he hasn't done in the past. And I think one of the beat writers was saying that they've kind of gotten to a point where, well, babying him hasn't really done anything for us. He's been hurt still. So we might as well try it this way and see what happens. If he hits every single day, then I don't even care if he pitches. I think if he's, you know, in the lineup every day except for the day he pitches, then he's an easy automatic start as a hitter. So for me, I'm not even worrying about him as a pitcher then.
All right. So, I mean, there's two things. If you had him, you have no issue throwing him in there week one as a hitter. But as someone who was originally scheduled and currently is still scheduled to pitch on Sunday, which again, if you get pushed back, you get nothing because it's a weekly lineup, which is a problem. If he's going to pitch like every Sunday, it's something you always have to worry about with Ohtani. He's someone that you're just sitting this week because of that blister, right?
If he's pitcher only, then yeah, I'm sitting him, one, because of the blister, and two, because we still haven't seen his command kind of come back. I think, you know, he's shown some flashes this spring training of the dominance, but the command still isn't fully there. And I kind of want to, as a pitcher, I want to at least see it once before I put him out there.
Who would you rather, let's just say you have a shallow bench. Your option is to start, assuming you don't have any relief options, you know, whatever, I'm really limiting you here. Your decision is Shohei Ohtani as your starter pitching, or Mike Minor, who's going against Texas at home.
I'll take Mike Minor. I mean, I'll take the chance at innings. I think Texas's lineup is not great. I think it's a little bit better than we sometimes want to pretend it's going to be, but I think it's still not a great lineup, and I'll still take him at home in that ballpark rather than take the chance on, because I think with the thing with Ohtani is he could go out, he could give you 5-6 innings with 10 Ks and no runs, but he could also go 3 with 7 walks because he's kind of been up and down like that. So I think early in the season, I'd rather take the what I think is going to be a decent start out of Minor versus chasing the chance of a zero or pretty much a massive negative right off the bat with Ohtani.
Gotcha. All right. So moving into our next piece of news here, the Philadelphia Phillies were considering, at least the reports all all off season where that Odubel Herrera had a legitimate chance to not only make the team, but be the team's starting center fielder with all of his off the field issues as well. That's not the case. He did not make the team. They optioned him down, and it looks like there's going to be a platoon with Adam Haseley and Roman Quinn in a platoon. You're not sure how the platoon will take shape because Roman Quinn is, can hit from both sides, but are you interested in either of these guys? Like, is this just like a 15 team? Let's see if Roman Quinn can make some noise and steal some bases because I'm not truly interested in Adam Haseley at this point, especially in a platoon, but I don't know if you have any different thoughts. Is there anything here to the Phillies, center field position?
I don't really have much interest in either guy. Cause I think with Quinn, you're hoping that he plays and runs. If he plays, he could be a very cheap source of steals, but it's a platoon. I think Haseley's going to get more of the at-bats. Haseley is a poor man's Brian Reynolds, maybe. Everything he does is a little bit worse than Brian Reynolds at 2 years ago. So I don't really have much interest in that because I think that at best that's a bottom of your bench guy that you're kind of swapping in as you go, especially in a platoon. So I think I'm not really too interested in either of them. I am interested in monitoring it and seeing if both of them are struggling, and maybe, God willing, Scott Kingery remembers how to play baseball and, can come back and actually make an impact there. Cause I think of all the guys, that's the one I'd be most interested in if somebody was to take that job.
Okay. And one last piece of news before we get into the rest of the episodes, Mike Yastrzemski was hit on the hand by Sean Manaea during Monday's Cactus League game. It looks like it's just a bruise. X-rays came back negative, and they are saying that he is day-to-day and he should be ready for the home opener, or the opener, which is not at home, I should say, because that's a big difference, because that's something that we can talk about, is them closing off the tunnels there in San Francisco and how much that could impact someone like Mike Yastrzemski. But San Francisco opens up in Seattle. Only three games. They have Sunday off, which is, I think we talked before the show, is bizarre that anyone has Sunday off. But how comfortable do you feel starting someone like Yastrzemski, who has a bruised hand? We don't know if that'll sap any kind of power in the first couple of games. And he does have three of four, whereas some teams have four. Is he someone that you would probably lean towards sitting, or is this just you drafted him probably relatively early? Is he just a guy you throw in? Assuming we hear nothing new, and there's nothing worse, is what it is.
I think it depends on your options to replace him.
We're gonna get an ad soon, everybody. We'll get some options.
Exactly. But I think if you have I'm trying to think of a guy that I probably wouldn't do it over. Like, if you have a lower tier guy that's gonna hit towards the bottom of an order, if he's playing, that's probably maybe not even Adam Eaton's a bad example because he's probably going to hit two, but a guy that's not really.
How about Miles Straw? Yeah, I don't know. Adam, let's go with Adam Eaton, because Miles Straw, if you really need stolen bases, you might go there. Let's go with Adam Eaton. He's at the Angels and he's got four games.
Yeah. I mean, that is probably a place where I'd play Eaton because he's got the four games. It looks like he's going to hit second in that order. Even without Eloy, that should be a pretty good order. He should score a ton of runs hitting towards the top of it. So I think, if he's up there and I have those, that's my first guy off the bench. That's definitely a choice that I'm making. But if I have, guys that are a little bit worse and might only have three games, I'm going to take Yastrzemski, because I think that, everything seems to be good at the moment. We seem to be thinking, and they seem to be saying, that he should be good to go. So I'm not really too worried about it. They do play on the West Coast. They play Seattle. So, for that, that is a late choice you'll have to make. But if you have another option that plays, late, if you have maybe Austin Slater on your bench, then I'm kind of okay with waiting to see if Yastrzemski is going to play, and then replacing him with Slater or, Alex Dickerson or another guy who's a late lineup or a late starting guy on Thursday.
All right. And we're just talking about Mike Yastrzemski, who's just hit on the hand, X-rays negatives, and whether you should use him. Because right now we're going to get into some starter sit, mainly hitters that you should consider putting in there because they happen to be have four games this week instead of three in the shortened first week for head-to-head and roto periods. So we're going to might as well have something called the Yastrzemski line here. We'll mention all the players and whether or not, in a utility format, if you would start them this week over Yastrzemski in three games. All these players have four games. We'll let you know who they're facing and what's up. So starting with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, they are facing four games versus the Chicago White Sox. And in this series, the White Sox are, of course, whipping out Lucas Giolito for opening day, followed by Dallas Keuchel, Lance Lynn, and then Dylan Cease. The four game options are starting with the utility infielder everywhere. That's, I guess, most of his value is David Fletcher. He's going to be leading off for the Angels, it looks like, on a daily basis, which, you know, he gives you a little power and a little speed. And by a little, I do mean a little. It's not a zero, but he doesn't give you much. Yeah. But he'll have a nice average. He's probably going to score a lot of runs in this lineup. But other than that, it's semi-empty. So Mike Yastrzemski. Yastrzemski gave his name, or David Fletcher. Who would you go with this week?
Oh man, I know
this is apples to oranges. Yeah. Like I said, there's too many players to name everyone, so we're just talking from a utility standpoint. If he's there, they're your last man in.
Yeah. So actually, he's another good example because they're playing at home, the Angels. So mm-hmm. I think that's kind of the guy that if I know Yastrzemski's in that opening day lineup, then I'm playing Yastrzemski. If he's not in the opening day, like, I know it's a cop-out kind of thing, but at the same time, like, I wouldn't, even with the 3-4 and their potential questions, because there is always the chance that, you know, Yastrzemski realizes that he can't go, his hand hurts too much, and he's out. I'd rather take the chance on getting, you know, one game of him than three of Fletcher, because Fletcher's really just going to kind of, he's going to score some runs. He's probably not going to drive in a lot. He's not going to hit many home runs, and he doesn't run nearly as much as you'd want a guy that doesn't hit for power to do. So you're really just kind of getting a batting average buoy early in the season. And I'd rather take the chance of getting something more impactful from Yastrzemski.
Yeah. And it makes a difference that it is only three or four games too, right? In the opening a series, because over a whole week, you know, the Fletcher can go out there, get a lot of hits and you really give you that boost in batting average. But you know, if it's a shorter period of time, you can try to throw someone out there with a spark, like our second option, Justin Upton. If I'm at all worried about Yastrzemski, you know, honestly, there's four games of Upton. I think I'm just going with Upton over Yastrzemski because Upton has killed it this spring with some pretty monster bombs. Yeah. And you're basically hoping for similar things from, you know, Yaz will have a, you know, higher average and some more runs, and Upton will have some more home runs, more RBIs. But yeah, give me Upton. He's someone I would definitely try to squeeze in there if you're coin flipping options. And I would put him over Yastrzemski.
I think, I like Upton a lot. I don't know if I'm willing to put him over Yastrzemski head to head, but I get where you're coming from. Cause
it's three versus four games too. Yeah. If all things being equal, I would go with Yaz, but with the bruised hand in 3-4 games, I think this is a move I would make, but yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, he'll get Keuchel, he'll get a lefty, in game two potentially, which I think will be good for Upton. I think, you know, I think he's going to play almost every single game. I think we're still unsure about that one. And I think the Ohtani question will be a big impact on how much Upton plays. But I think that if you want to start off the year with, you know, trying to push as many home runs into a small span as you can, I think Upton's certainly a good guy to take a chance on in week one.
Next guy is Jose Iglesias, who I have some shares of in deep formats because he does not hit the ball hard, but his barrel rate did skyrocket with and it actually looks like it's somewhat legitimate as far as his line drive rate going up. He's still not going to be doing much for you, but in terms of, you know, being the complete empty hitter he once was, you look at his batting average and everything from last year and it just looks screams regression, which is definitely coming. But I do like him to a degree, but I would like him a lot more if he was hitting at the top of this lineup. He is not. He's at the bottom. He does have four games. I don't see him as a real option here unless you have an injury. And as far as I can tell, unless you have Dansby Swanson, who is nursing a leg injury, if he's good to go, you're fine. But I can't think of a reason to really start Iglesias this week, even with the four games, because there's a utility. You probably have a better utility option. I'd go with Yastrzemski, for example. And I can't think of a reason to start him over any other middle infielders, even with three games that you were already considering starting.
Yeah, I'm with you on, I like him as a, you know, a last bench guy potentially, or, you know, a guy that's on a watch list for a waiver pickup or something like that. But yeah, he's not a guy that I'm really looking to find a place to start this week, even with the four games.
And the last guy on the Angels that is interesting is Jared Walsh, who is, you know, could another spark guy who could always make some fireworks going off in four games. I think that he would be behind my Yastrzemski line for sure. And I think I would probably be hard pressed to really put him in there. I mean, if you are an unfortunate Luke Voit owner, he is someone that you could, him or CJ Krohn or one of those guys you really put in to the back end of your lineup is someone that you could be looking to put in. So with the four games, I think that could put him at the forefront, but otherwise it's situation dependent, obviously, but yeah, I think I still start like the Yastrzemski because the world over him with like a 3-game question mark over Walsh. But what is your thoughts?
I think Walsh is a guy that I never really invested much in this year. I think, you know, there's a lot of reason why people liked him in the small sample, but the question for it's similar to what the Upton thing is. I have no idea how the Angels are really going to run that lineup out when Otani's playing between Upton, between Walsh, between, you know, Pujols was probably a bench guy, but he's still there. So I think that there's definitely more than enough questions as to if Walsh will play enough games. There is one lefty that they're starting against, which I believe he probably won't get that game. They might go with Pujols or someone else at first. But I think that he's another guy that I'm just kind of leaving on the bench. And if I drafted him, he's on my bench this week.
You are right. You know what it is? I'm sitting here thinking that he should obviously be starting against all of these righties, three of the four at least. And maybe he gets the fourth start if Otani doesn't happen to be hitting, which we'll see what happens there. But you are right. There was a lot of question marks for this opening series. We don't know what the Angels are up to yet. So, yeah, it's better to err on the side of caution. On the other side versus the Angels, visiting Los Angeles is the White Sox. And as far as we already talked about Adam Eaton as an option that you can certainly plug in there. He'll be at the top of that lineup. Another one is Andrew Vaughn, which I think at this point is someone we wanted to discuss, because a lot of people drafted him not expecting to have to start him, but it's looking more and more like he's your everyday left fielder possibly and sneaking in there at DH occasion for the White Sox. So we can talk a little bit more about Eaton, but Andrew Vaughn, is he kind of a slam dunk for you at this point? The Angels are whipping out for the first four games, Dylan Bundy, Andrew Heaney, Alex Cobb, and possibly Shohei Ohtani.
I think that if I have him, I'll probably put him in a lineup. I know I have this decision in at least one place, and I think it's between him and maybe Evan White for me. And it's kind of I'm still on the fence on which of those two I kind of want to go with. It'll probably be Vaughn, especially if we get some more indication that it actually looks like he's going to play. I know Roster Resource right now has him as their DH with, I think, Garcia playing left, but I think that realistically what we could see is him kind of take over that left field job if they're comfortable with him, you know, playing out there defensively. Eloy wasn't good, so they were probably expecting to be a little bit of a black hole in left defensively, so I think that doesn't really matter too much to them. There is definitely for me some concern with Vaughn since he, you know, struggled in 2019 in his only minor league numbers we have so far, and then really didn't get to really play in games last year. But I think that if he's on that opening day roster, which looks like it's going to be the case, then I'm probably playing him over most of my fringe corner infield guys.
Gotcha. You know, I don't know if I'm blindly in on Vaughn. I like the spark in the first four games because he does have the four games. I think you play in all four. I would start him over example of a decent option like Carlos Santana. He's at home versus Texas, and Texas is not really throwing out much in terms of valuable assets. They have scheduled Kyle Gibson, Kohei Arihara, and Jordan Lyles. I don't know if I think I might just like the extra game of Vaughn. I think that I'm in the minority there. But you know, Andrew Vaughn is helium because you know, exciting rookie. So I'm sure many people will make that decision. Well, who would you like there? Because again, it's Carlos Santana, good, decent, you know, matchup at home versus Texas, only three games versus Vaughn in four. Since you're actually considering sitting Vaughn for Evan White, I assume that you are, you would be in the Santana camp.
No, I mean, I think that's an example of a time where I would take Vaughn. I think that we're kind of in the position right now where I'm trying to figure out exactly if they're going to let Vaughn get a chance. I mean, if he makes the opening day roster, I think he plays every single day. I don't think there's any reason for them to put him on the roster and not keep him there full time. And every indication is that he's making the opening day roster. So I think that in a lot of situations, I will probably play him over, you know, the Whites, the Santanas. I'm trying to think of, like, I guess another helium guy, like Bobby Dalback. Would you rather Dalback or Vaughn?
That's difficult because he's in there. Dalback's going to Camden Yards, yeah, and he gets to face Matt Harvey and Bruce Zimmerman. John Means isn't exactly like, you know, I like him as much as the next guy, but you know, it's still John Means, not Garrett Cole.
Yeah.
So I think I'd roll Dalback there because I mean, I think you could be looking at three home runs possibly in an opening series. So it's, I don't know. It's more of he's on a roll. And if strikeouts are not counting in your league, I think I'd probably roll Dalback there in three games.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the range where I'd be, you know, having a decision. The more I think about it between, you know, Vaughn and White or Vaughn and it's Dalback and Sano is another decision I have, but you know, something along those lines where I think Vaughn's going to play. So I think that I'd rather take the chance and see, you know, what he can do in that lineup, because again, that lineup, even without Eloy, should still score a ton of runs. Yep. So I think that Vaughn will probably be the decision for most of my, you know, if I have him, I'm probably playing him, but there is going to be some scenarios with guys like Dalback and a few other guys that are fringy that I would probably play over.
Okay. Turning the page to someone that is completely opposite of the hitters we have just discussing, Miles Straw in Houston. He's got four games versus Oakland, who will be starting Chris Bassett, Jesus Luzardo in his 65-mile-an-hour turkey sub pitch, which you were talking about before the show. If no one knows what I'm talking about, look it up on Twitter. He's Luzardo, who throws 97 miles an hour, has started throwing a slow curve called the turkey sub. And if you haven't heard of it, look it up. It's just this 65-mile-an-hour 12-6 Barry Zito special. And it's pretty magnificent. But again, Oakland for the first four games, Chris Bassett, Jesus Luzardo, Sean Manea, and Frankie Montas. And Miles Straw gets all four of them. All four pitchers have the ability to shut you down, and they have the ability to blow up. So if, you know, if you're a team that is in need of stolen bases, is Miles Straw a auto start for you with four games? If your other options are all basically fringe?
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you're drafting a guy like Straw, you're pretty much using him when you have, you know, you only have to use him when somebody's hurt, or you're using him in situations like this where, I mean, in season, you might get the decision between a 7-start week and a 5-start week. But, you know, 4-3, when we have these short slates, what I like to do personally is instead of going for the guys that are, you know, maybe 15-10 over the course of a season, I'd rather take the chance on the guy with like 30 stolen base upside and see if he gets me two or three in a four game span versus the guy that might hit a home run, might steal one base. I'd rather take the chance on getting multiple. And then that kind of puts me ahead for the next week where I don't need to keep running Straw and his, you know, zero power out there. So I think that against most start sit decisions, I'm probably playing him over a lot of other guys.
All right. So if let's just say you're on a team where you're flexible, you could use some stolen bases. You don't necessarily have to have them. Where is he on the Mike Yastrzemski line? If there's any worry for you with him, is Straw someone you start over him?
I'd probably stick with Yastrzemski because I think that he can, you know, he has the potential to put out, you know, a home run or two over the course of a weekend. I think it's more I'm trying to think of a good.
Let's lower the bar to Andrew McCutchen, who's got three games versus Max Fried, Charlie Morton, and Ian Anderson.
I'd probably take Straw over McCutchen because I think with McCutchen, you're kind of just going for floor and consistency. You're not really expecting him to steal multiple bases. So I think that's a scenario where I'll take Straw going for a couple bags. The potential of Straw swiping, you know, 2 to 3 bags.
Okay. I think that's a good spot. On the other side, the A's are facing Houston, obviously, for the same four exact games. Houston will be starting here. Zach Greinke, Lance McCullers Jr., Christian Javier, and Jose Urquidy. kind of an underrated group. Lance McCullers coming off that fresh contract. A few interesting guys here you could play. Jed Lowrie. As a Mets fan, I refuse to talk about him. The floor is yours.
I mean, he's going to – roster resource right now has him hitting .200 in that lineup. I know you agree with me. I have zero confidence in his ability to stay healthy whatsoever. So I don't think there are many – similar to what we were talking about before with Iglesias, I don't see a lot of scenarios where I'd rather play him over some of the other, you know, relatively interesting second baseman that I probably drafted or middle infielders. I don't really see many unless I'm, you know, struggling due to an injury or something along those lines. I don't really think Lowry's a guy I would consider if I owned him.
All right. Since he could be on a lot of waiver wires right now, yeah. Unless they were picked up very recently, he's someone that you could pick up who is a legitimately interesting person for four games. Let's say that you punted your middle infield spot, which is very easy to do considering how deep it was. And you are starting someone like Luis Urias, who was named the starting shortstop and has had a decent spring for the Milwaukee Brewers. He has three games versus Kenta Maeda, Jose Berrios, Michael Pineda. He'll probably be playing all three in theory. What if that's your decision, you have someone like Urias and you have an interchangeable spot at the end of your bench where you can maybe pick up Lowrie. Do you think that extra game worth grabbing him in this opening weekend for you over, you know, a fairly fringy option like Luis Urias?
Yeah, I think that's a situation where I would potentially consider starting Lowrie. Urias is good. He hasn't really shown a ton at the big league level. Lowrie, even though it was, you know, 4 years ago or 3 years ago, whenever he last played regularly, he has shown some success offensively. And I think he could be a guy that not swipes bags, but could score a decent amount of runs early in a season, hitting high in an order. Like if I have these, you know, very fringe decisions and there's a guy who's going to hit .200 in an order versus a guy who's probably going to hit in the bottom third, I'll probably take the guy that's hitting a little higher in the order.
All right. I'm asking a question I think I already know the answer to, but this is going to be someone who's a complete fireworks hit or miss guy. He has three games versus the Tampa Bay Rays. Glasnow, Yarbrough, and probably Chris Archer or Rich Hill. I'm not sure what they're doing. Probably Rich Hill. And that is Jazz Chisholm. If you go safe, the safety of four games with Lowrie or, you know, whatever, Elvis Andrus, we can talk about him next on the same exact team. It has four games. Where do you stack guys up like that versus three games of someone like Chisholm, who a lot of people are probably who just picked up probably off of waivers or off of FAB this past weekend, or if you haven't drafted yet, he's an exciting option. He had a nice spring, has a severe contact and strikeout problem, but has power and speed. In this opening weekend, do you like him in three games over some of these, you know, safer options with four games?
I think it depends on how the rest of my roster is set up, but you know, if I have safety in a few other positions elsewhere, then yeah, I'm probably going to take Jazz and see if I can get lucky and he's hot for a weekend. I think that with a guy like Lowrie, it's more just, he's not really going to actively hurt you. And probably the same thing with Semien. Semien might steal some bags, but I think with Chisholm, you could see a home run or two and a stolen base or two over the course of three games. So I think I'd rather take that chance than the safety.
All right. A more interesting hitter here that I have, I think I'll actually be sitting him a couple of places just because I happen to have good options. And that's Mark Canna, who is going to be batting at the very top, leading off for this lineup in Oakland. And he has the same board games we just talked about. Starting off with the Yastrzemski line, where is he for you? Yastrzemski versus Canna.
I'll play Canha over Yastrzemski with any question of Yastrzemski's availability. I'm probably playing Canha over a decent number of outfielders who have, you know, three games that aren't necessarily stars by any means. He's probably looking at lineups, probably, you know, in five outfield leagues, probably outfield four in a few places for me. But I think in almost every place I have him, he's going to be in the lineup.
Would you start Dominic Smith or Mark Canha?
See, I don't love Smith because I'm still not sure how that playing time. I think he will play.
I know, that's why this is a difficult question.
Yeah, it'll probably be Canha, but like I just don't have any Dom Smith to have that decision. But I think I'd probably play Canha over him because I know you love Smith, and there's been some like active changes.
I actually don't. As a Mets fan, I don't. I mean, I like him as a player. I think he's a doubles guy. I think what we saw last year isn't necessarily him. So while I think he's a good player, I do think he's incredibly overvalued this year for fantasy.
Yeah, I think that, you know, and J.D. Davis has played pretty well in spring, if I'm not mistaken, defensively. At least it's been better. Mm-hmm. I just think that there's enough questions about that lineup that I wouldn't be shocked to see Smith, you know, even sit one of those three games, which makes it even, you know, worse. I don't really see Canha sitting at all. I think he's an everyday player for them. So I'll take Canha at four.
I agree. Someone interesting. How about Eddie Rosario? He's got three games versus Detroit. Matthew Boyd, Julio Teheran, Tarik Skubal probably is who he's going to be seeing. And again, they're at Comerica. So Eddie Rosario, not the best ballpark for three games versus Canha for four games. He's I think for most people, they would think just to start Rosario, but I think it's a very legitimate coin flip.
Yeah. I think again, I'm kind of okay with Canha there because it might also just be that I'm higher on him than a lot of other people are. Mm-hmm. Or potentially other people are, but I think that he's definitely a guy I'd be almost auto starting.
Yep. And then I think here's a good line to draw the kind of player that you would probably still start in three games. Ian Happ. He's got three games versus Pittsburgh. He's at home at Wrigley. Chad Kuhl, Tyler Anderson, Mitch Keller. I think you still roll with Ian Happ there because I think he can do quite a bit of damage in three games. I think it's still close for that fourth game. Versus someone who doesn't have any like massive advantage over Canha. I mean, there's going to be more power from Happ, but in like four games, you know, three or four games, this is a small sample, but I still go with like Ian Happ over Canha in that situation.
Yeah, I would agree. Hasn't Happ homered on opening day, like back-to-back seasons or something?
Yes, he has.
I think he homered on like the first pitch of the season 2 years ago. I remember that.
He did that in his first major league at bat, didn't he?
Something like that. Yeah. Like, definitely a guy that I would start over Canha, I think.
All right. And the last guy in Oakland I want to talk about is Mitch Moreland, Mitchie Two Bags, as Heath Capps likes to call him, the doubles machine. He's going to probably be in there every day at DH for the most part. He's a little risky for me because, I mean, everyone knows I love Kai Tom, the Rule 5 guy. He'll probably get in there, could get in the outfield. Do we think Moreland is just going to be in there like in a four game series? I don't necessarily know if you count on him to be in there every day. I mean, he's obviously not playing first base. Matt Olson, Gold Glove, is sitting there. So what do we think of Mitch Moreland here as a last, a corner infield, maybe emergency bat for Luke Voit or possibly a utility guy in four games here?
I'm probably playing him. Thinking back to the Vaughn conversation, it's kind of the same thing. Although I think Vaughn has more upside than Moreland. But I think like Carlos Santana, I'd start him over. Dahlbeck, I probably wouldn't. Going, you know, along those same lines of groupings, that I think that if I had Moreland, I'm probably putting him in a corner infield slot in a few places. Over some of the more fringy guys. Like, I know in a lot of my corner infield spots, I have like Heimer Candelario, who I like a lot. I'd probably have four games of Moreland all against righties in there, as opposed to going with Candelario for three. So I think
that you never sit Candelario. How dare you?
I love Candelario, but I mean, I think that especially with all the games being against righties, I'll take Moreland in that one.
Yeah. Yeah. Not a bad idea. Moving over to the Arizona Diamondbacks. They are taking on the San Diego Padres. They get four games here. Arizona or the Padres are pitching, Cy Young pitcher pretty much every day. That's what they're doing. They have Yu Darvish, Blake Snell, Joe Musgrove, and Chris Paddock. So, you know, no walk in the park. Chris Paddock has apparently fixed his fastball. So we'll see what's happening here. Arizona has Christian Walker, Eduardo Escobar, and Josh Rojas. So we'll just throw all those out there. I love Christian Walker. I think that if you look at things like max exit velocity, his barrel percentage, he's improved year over year. He can steal some bases. It was just a down year in general in Arizona. He's someone I kind of targeted everywhere for a corner infielder or, you know, for my first bench guy, because I think that he is just tremendously undervalued. Not that I think he's going to outperform necessarily that many people in front of him, but I think that he's a lot closer to the pack than where he's being taken. So, it's a tough four games, though. Like I said, those are tough four pitchers. So Walker, Escobar, and Rojas, Do you think that the fourth game gives any of these guys an edge up, considering how tough the competition will be for them?
I think I could justify Walker over. Again, we're talking about the corner infield spot again. So a lot of the same guys we've been discussing already. If I had to choose between him and Escobar, I'd rather choose him. I think, you know, Escobar's a fine player, but I think Walker has more of an average floor than Escobar does. So I think that in that decision, and honestly, now that we're going through it, I'm kind of thinking about it a lot. I think that corner infield spot, unless, you know, you hit on a breakout, you're going to end up pretty often making these decisions weekly based on, you know, number of games that these guys have, because you're kind of running into a lot of these first base, third base guys that you're drafting for that slot. They're all really similar players. So I think, mm-hmm. you know, you're kind of just picking and choosing which one might have an extra game here or there. And you're pretty much looking pretty heavily to matchups when you're making those decisions. So I think that, you know, Walker probably slots in behind Vaughn, maybe a little bit ahead of Moreland out of the guys we've discussed so far. Probably that's probably the order that I would do it in. Escobar's probably around Moreland, maybe a little bit behind. And then Rojas is a guy that I think that second base and, you know, middle infield, we talked about, it's kind of deep. Rojas has had an incredible spring. Seems like they want him to play. I think Roster Resource has him hitting like fifth in that order. It's not a great order, but the top of it is decent enough where they can score some runs. So I think that Rojas is a guy that I would, you know, he's ahead of a guy like Jed Lowry, who we've talked about, or some of the other middle infield options that we've talked about.
Who do you like more, Walker in four games at San Diego or Rhys Hoskins at home three games versus Atlanta?
Let's see. I'll take Walker. They're similar players.
Okay.
I think that's extra game.
All right. And the opposite side of that, the Padres obviously facing the Cardinals. Padres are at home. They have Jake Cronenworth and Jerkson Profar for the time being with Kim. Looks like he's on the bench. Grisham is out for the time being. It looks like Cronenworth or Profar are going to be in there every day. So let's just talk about the entire logjam: Cronenworth, Profar, and Kim. You don't know what the heck is happening with Kim, so he's kind of out of the conversation. But Cronenworth or Profar look like they'll be in there. Cronenworth for sure looks like he's going to be in there every day, at least for the time being. How do you like him against the Diamondbacks, who will be starting Madison Bumgarner, Merrill Kelly, Caleb Smith, and Taylor Widener maybe, or Luke Weaver? I know they've had some injuries and they've had some setbacks. So, that's a nice little stretch of pitchers to start some guys against.
Yeah, I think Cronenworth I'm definitely starting over almost any, not almost any, but if he's in my middle infield slot, and he's probably one of the better options that you could have. I believe, you know, he's another guy that's probably going to hit relatively high in an order, either lead off or two, I think I saw some places. So I think that he's a guy that is pretty much an auto start for me this week, you know, barring something where I've, you know, double tapped shortstop earlier or something.
Well, here he's available at corner and middle infield a lot of places.
Right, he's available at corner too.
So let's say you have Ke'Bryan Hayes and he's got three games versus Chicago at Wrigley, Kyle Hendricks, Jake Arrieta, Zach Davies. You have to make a decision between Hayes and Cronenworth, who get four days against non-elite pitchers, let's call them. I think there's an interesting decision where a lot of people are really high on Hayes. It's a nice ballpark, some slightly tougher pitching. Is that a decision for you?
I think I'd play Cronenworth because I think in these really short, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. Both of those guys are probably, neither one of them is going to be a, you know, 30 home run guy, at least in my eyes, aren't gonna be 30 home run guy or, you know, 20 plus stolen base guy. They're both kind of gonna be, if everything breaks right, you know, 10, 20, 10, 15, 10 kind of thing, that range. So I think that in those scenarios, I want to look to, you know, RBI and run production. And I think that the Pirates lineup is, they've scored the most runs in spring training, but I don't think that's gonna kind of stay. I think that the Padres are gonna score a ton more runs. So I'm going to play the guy that I think is going to accumulate some more runs and some more RBIs early on. And I think that's going to be Cronenworth versus Hayes.
All right. And Jerkson Profar is interesting. We assume he'll be in there. It's not a lock, but assuming because he can move around, he'll be in there at least three of the four, if not all four. And but there is a possibility he plays them all. Where would you stack him against, let's say, someone like Robbie Grossman? Let's say you waited really late on outfield. You're interested in Grossman being in there every day for Detroit. He has the power and speed, but he has three games against Cleveland, you know, who obviously is always bringing out some very tough starting pitching against you. Would you go with Profar over a guy like that? Can we raise the bar even further up than that? Or are you only considering him against like kind of the fringe end guys like Grossman?
I think that I think I would definitely consider him. I would play him over Grossman. I think you can move up a little bit, maybe not as much as, you know, we've moved up for Canna or a few other people. I think that there's still enough questions around if he's actually going to play every day. You know, we were talking about it before the Mercado made the opening day lineup or roster. I think that him, they're going to probably try to find a way to get him in a lineup somewhere, which might mean Cronenworth slots in the outfield and Kim plays second. So I think there's enough questions for me for Profar to not be getting all four of the games, maybe only three out of the four, but I would still play him over like a Grossman or some of those other guys, but I don't think I'd push him up too much.
All right. The next team is it's sad. It's the Colorado Rockies. They're at home for four games, which you drafted Rockies. You're like, yay. They actually play a lot of their home games early. I can't tell you off the top of my head, but they have like three of their first 4 weeks basically of games are at home. It's pretty crazy. But they do have all four of them in opening week versus the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw, Trevor Bauer, Walker Buehler, and Julio Urias. That's not good. Two of them being left-handers. So let's start with the left-handers and Sam Hilliard and Ryan McMahon. So they have all, you know all the names we've been talking about, so we don't have to repeat too many of them. But yeah, what do you think of those two? Who they do have four games and they have them at home in Colorado. It just happens to be against like a murderer's row of pitching.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really like Hilliard, and if you know three of these four were against righties, then I would probably say he's as
and Tapia as well. Sorry, he's also lefty.
Yeah, I think with Hilliard, it's, you know, three of the four, if they were against lefties or against righties, then I would probably put him in there. I think that he's one of those guys, you know, unlike some of the other ones we've been talking about so far, where there is the potential for him to be, you know, an impact power, impact speed, potentially guy, but it is going to come at a cost of a pretty, you know, crappy average. So I think that what I'm looking at with him is I don't like the two matchups against lefties where there's a question if he's going to be in the lineup. He should be, but it's the Rockies, so we never really know. Tapia, I think, is going to play no matter what. I think they're kind of just going to let him go. So similar to Miles Straw, where if you need some speed and you want to chase a couple bags early in the season, then I'm all for kind of playing him over a more boring, you know, even like a Robbie Grossman, like we were talking about before, kind of guy. McMahon is a guy that I looked at in a few places. I think he's going to play relatively every day as well. I don't really see him being a heavy platoon, but there's definitely enough concern. I think that out of the corner infield guys we've discussed, he's probably more Eduardo Escobar-like to me, where it's like, if I don't really have a better option, then I'll play him. But there's probably a lot of situations where he is your better option than, you know, where he is your guy that you were expecting to slot into a corner infield slot. So you're playing him in that case.
All right, let me give you an impossible decision. It's getting up to game day. You don't have a ton of information on Dansby Swanson, who, again, nursing a lower body injury. And we don't necessarily know if he'll play all three of the four games in opening weekend. Maybe he gets a day off. It's just a risk. Like, there's nothing definitive. It looks like he'll play opening day. They do have an off day Friday, but it's just something you got to think about. So you have Dansby Swanson, or you have Ryan McMahon, who's got four games, probably playing all of them at home with two tough lefties. Is there any consideration to going with a guy like McMahon if you are, you know, you have a worry about that, like someone like Dansby Swanson, or is that bar too low for you?
I think that if we don't get much more information on Dansby, it's kind of okay to sit him for McMahon, because part of why you're drafting Dansby is his ability to run. And if he's not fully healthy, he's probably not going to run. They're probably not going to let him, you know, take those chances. So I think it's kind of reasonable to make that decision if you wanted to, assuming, you know, you have no idea of how healthy Dansby really is. But if you have, you know, any indication that it seems like, you know, even if it's just the team's positive talk saying he's good to go, I think you're playing Dansby every single time.
All right. And there's a couple of guys that are right-handers, which again, you know, we mentioned the two tough lefties. There also happens to be Walker Buehler and Trevor Bauer in there. So yeah, it's not like there's a picnic for the other half. CJ Krohn and Garrett Hampson. If anyone owns CJ or sorry, has drafted CJ Krohn, I doubt you're sitting him.
Yeah.
It'll be hard for you to do at this point, but there are plenty of teams that drafted him early as just a backup option. So there's plenty of people you could have to start over him. So let's first start with CJ Krohn versus Mike Yastrzemski, because we've been doing it. Who would you start there?
I'd probably take Krohn. You know, we've again, most of the guys we've talked about, it seems like have been corner infield, first base types. I think he might be above Vaughn for me, even with the brutal matchups, just because I think he's going to hit in the middle of an order. Again, the Dodgers rotation is absolutely disgusting, but I think that I'm playing Krohn pretty much everywhere I have him. And aside from, I probably the only, you know, if there's a top 5 to 10 first baseman, I'm probably not playing him over them. So, but you know, if you're a Voit owner and somehow Krohn is still there, you should definitely be attacking, going after Krohn.
One fringe guy we brought up earlier, who I think is still interesting. Again, 3 games in Baltimore versus bad pitching. Bobby Dalbec, 3 games, or CJ Krohn, 4 games versus the Dodgers at Coors.
Man,
are you just still sticking with Krohn? Dalbec is interesting.
He's really interesting. He makes it a tough decision. I think I'm going with Krohn because from everything, which makes absolutely no sense to me, every indication right now is that Dalbec is hitting like 8 or 9 in that order, which for some reason, I mean, Christian Vasquez is apparently hitting 7th according to Roster Resource. That lineup makes no sense to me in the way that they've laid it out. So I don't want Dalbec hitting 9, even with the, you know, in that situation, I'd rather take Krohn, who I think is going to hit in the middle of an order and does get to play in Coors.
All right. Raising the bar a little bit more. Josh Bell, literally hitting like one of the hottest hitters on the planet in spring, has 3 games versus the Mets, Jacob DeGrom, Marcus Stroman, and Taijuan Walker. Any consideration there? I mean, Bell looks like someone who would be hard to sit at this point, but he has himself a very, very tough assignment as well in 3 games instead of 4.
I think I'll take Bell there.
Yeah.
I
mean, Bell's about as hot as you can possibly get at the moment.
Yeah. And I mean, again, I like Krohn a lot. I don't want to make him out to be the second coming of God. You know, you're going to play your
probably will fit. You probably start both of them for
yeah, honestly, my actual answer would be I'm figuring out who I can bench to play both of them. But, you know, in reality, I'm probably playing Krohn, or I'm probably playing Bell over Krohn there if I don't have any other option.
It's basically the decision comes down to Krohn. You're probably playing him if you have him.
Yeah.
Exactly. And the last players are the Dodgers themselves. 4 games in Coors Field, definitely not facing as tough a pitching. The interesting thing here comes down to Chris Taylor and Gavin Lux. We do not know what they're going to do. If it's a strict platoon, like on paper, it looks like it should be, Lux will get 3 out of these 4 games. So does that make Taylor unstartable for now? If you're coin flipping this in at least the opening series to see what they're doing, if Lux is getting 3 out of the 4 in Coors, does that make him an auto start? Again, we don't know what they're doing. He may not be an auto start. He may not get all these. We don't know how they're going to move around the lineup. So how do you deal with Taylor and Lux? Beautiful matchup. We don't know what the Dodgers are going to do.
Yeah, I think that something keeps telling me that for some weird reason that they're just going to play Taylor.
Me too. I mean, he always plays.
He always plays. They like him. I just can't, like, it doesn't make sense. He probably, like, he's not bad. Bad is, he's not, that's the wrong word. Lux is more of an upside play for them and for fantasy owners, and everybody wants to see Gavin Lux actually play, but they like Chris Taylor and they find places to play him. If that is in, you know, if they do find a place in the outfield to play him, I don't know. I think he plays. And I think if he plays, you're probably trying to find a way to get him in, over, you know, some of the fringier 3-start middle infield options. You know, if you know he's playing, he's in your lineup, I think, but it's just a matter of the questions on if he's playing. And if I had to be a betting man, I would put Chris Taylor's going to play more games than Gavin Lux.
I mean, you could just say play them all if you can, because most of the time for most teams, especially in 15 team leagues, you can afford to, because it is four games in cores. And even if you get in there for three of them or even two of them, it's a big deal. Yep. But this problem with Taylor and Luck stretches to AJ Pollock and Justin Turner, a couple of other fringy guys that you probably have players you could start over. But again, AJ Pollock, we know that, you know, he got through last season relatively healthy. Giving him a day off in four games is not out of the question. Maybe Chris Taylor goes to the outfield. Edwin Rios is perfectly capable of coming in. Justin Turner could get a day. We know he, you know, is, you know, could use a day, especially in the beginning of the season, maybe not play all four in a row. So if you're starting any of these guys, I'd say none of these guys are starting all four games. It wouldn't surprise me if any of them did, but I would put my money on all of them at least getting one of these games off.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's pretty reasonable that if you wanted to say, you know, all four of those guys, however they somehow split them, end up playing three games each, that makes sense to me, and I could definitely see that happening. And then if in that case, I'd probably order them. Oh man, I don't know where I want to put Lux because we haven't
Turner,
seen
Turner. I'd have a hard time sitting Turner.
Yeah, Turner's probably the top guy, and then I want to say Taylor, Lux, then Pollock, but I don't feel confident about that. I like Taylor second, and then I think you can flip-flop Pollock or Lux depending on, you know, they obviously play very different positions, so your needs are going to be dependent. But if I knew all three, they were or all four were playing three games, Turner's an auto start. Taylor's probably as close to an auto start as can be, you know, unless you double tap shortstop or, you know, something along those lines where you have two absolute stars.
There's five guys here, so I'll repeat them. Rank Justin Turner, CJ Krohn, Christian Walker, Andrew Vaughn, Bobby Dalbec. Again, that's Justin Turner and CJ Krohn, Christian Walker, Andrew Vaughn, Bobby Dalbec. Who do you like the most if you had to decide amongst those guys?
Turner, Krohn, Dalbec, Vaughn, Walker. Turner, because if he plays, he's going to hit like third.
Yeah.
So third in cores against that pitching staff, he's easily the top guy.
He's the guy who easily can get off to the, hey, if he's, everyone will be like, if he stays healthy, he could be an MVP. That's what the talk is after the opening weekend. It's Justin Turner. People always forget just how good he is.
Yeah. Even last year he hit, you know, in his relatively down year, cause he was hurt. He's still been an elite hitter every year.
All right. So we went through all the teams playing four games and the hitters you can consider starting this week. We're going to end the episode here by rolling through the opening weekend of games for starting pitching. Just not everybody, just the guys that you consider possibly streaming. We mentioned a couple early in the show. Let's start with a lot of Royals here because, again, they're facing Texas. How about we'll go through all their games. How about Brad Keller? Do you like him as a streaming option, assuming we can give two answers, 12-team and 15-team. 15-team, I'd say he's probably owned. So maybe we'll back off that. Let's just go with, you know, what, 12 or 15 team. If you need to stream and Keller's available, do you like his chances versus the Rangers?
Yeah. I think that's a rotation that, especially early in the year, I've been targeting a lot. Keller's been a guy I've been trying to draft mainly for the first week, but also just because I actually think he's one of the few guys in maybe all of baseball, he's done it for a few years now, who can actually kind of control contact to an extent, as best as we can kind of understand it. So I think he's a guy that I'm definitely rolling out there and starting this week, as well as probably, you know, the other two Royals guys. Definitely in 15 team leagues, he's, like you said, he's probably owned. And in 12 team leagues, I think there's reason to consider starting him or streaming him early in the year.
It's kind of sad. You got like opening day. You got like Jacob DeGrom versus Max Scherzer. And then you have Brad Keller versus Kyle Gibson.
Yeah.
It's just too bad. Anyway, this is opening day. How do you like the other guy on the other side, Kyle Gibson versus the underrated Royals offense? Is he anyone where, again, 15-team teams, 15-team leagues, Brad Keller may be owned, probably is.
Yeah.
And your streaming options are severely limited there. How do you like Kyle Gibson as a possibility for opening day? Because there's just not that many options.
Gibson's a guy I picked up in one of my 15-team NFBC leagues with the intention of starting him this week. I think that the Royals are going to be a little bit better offensively, but not exactly, you know, if I'm picking a streaming option, some of the other ones are a little bit, you know, have much worse matchups than the Royals, but I'm only really using him in lineups that I've had a couple, you know, I had E-Rod, I had a couple other guys who either got pushed to next week or, you know, are injured and are potentially at least missing a start or two. So I think he's a guy that I would consider streaming. I probably wouldn't go that far in 12s. I think in 12s, you might be able to find one of these other guys that is at least a little more interesting in your somewhere on your, you know, wire that you can go after.
On the second day of the season, April 2nd, there's not a ton on the board because a lot of teams have off. In very shallow leagues, like if you're ESPN 10 team, Ryan Yarbrough absolutely at Miami is a great option. I doubt he's not owned in many 12 teams, but there's possibility if you're not, if you're in your home league and Ryan Yarbrough is not owned, I think he's absolutely someone to pick up and pitch at Miami. But if we're looking deeper than that, I mean, there's not much to like here. I mean, Antonio Senzatella is in Coors versus the Dodgers. Yep. How about Johnny Cueto? He's at Seattle.
I don't want to. I mean, it's a 10 team league, so I don't like, you know, if you're thinking.
No. I meant Yarbrough for 10 team. I meant 10 and 12. In 10s, he's probably not owned. Yeah. In 12s, he may not be owned. Now we're talking deep, because beyond that, there's not much for streaming in deep leagues.
Yeah. I would probably avoid it, and I'd rather go for. Trying to see if I can find a good idea here. Like if I'm going, you know, daily pickups and I'm streaming a guy, I'd rather take the
Merrill Kelly.
No, I was gonna say like one of the guys that could potentially come in after. Coming after maybe even like James Paxton or one of the longer guys in the White Sox potentially after Keuchel. I'd rather go after try to steal a win somewhere than roll with Cueto. But I actually really like Seattle's offense. So
I think I just avoid, you just don't stream on the second.
Yeah.
just don't stream on the second. On the third, going back to Kansas City, Mike Minor, I think we already talked. He seems like a great option versus Texas. He seems like a nice guy to target if you want to stream. So I like Mike Minor.
Jake Arrieta?
I can't do it.
They're so bad.
They are bad. I know we like Seattle a little bit. I think I'd rather maybe go Logan Webb over Jake Arrieta.
I actually think Logan Webb's a much more talented pitcher. So yes, but
I don't necessarily mind Chris Flexen in that same game.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what it is? I have a problem with Jake Arrieta. He's just an ass. So I can't get my head wrapped around, but it's not a bad pick. I think I like Logan Webb. I think I'd actually go Flexen over Arrieta a little bit.
The Archer Hill pairing, one of them could be available.
Yes.
And again, whichever one's going to potentially come in second, I'd prioritize, but either way, they're probably not terrible options.
And to finish out the show, let's talk about the streaming options for Sunday, which is tricky because you don't know who's going to get moved around. We already mentioned that with Ochoa Ohtani. Anyone who follows me or listens to me knows how much I love Austin Gomber. He had such a fantastic spring. Do not start him. he's at home in Colorado. You know, he's got a nice curveball. He's facing the Dodgers. Don't do it. I'm not doing it. If he throws a no-hitter, so be it. You know what? Do not start Austin Gomber.
Yeah, I have no additional thing to comment on Austin Gomber. So yeah. Don't play him. Don't start him.
As far as streaming goes, in those more shallow formats, Brady Singer to stick with, you know, target the Rangers is a nice spot. In shallow, I'm coming up empty here. Zimmerman is somewhat interesting if you're desperate, but I don't want to go there. I mean, I think as deep as I'd go, Carlos Martinez, maybe against Cincinnati, but I mean, I have seen him look not very sharp. I don't particularly like the options to stream in shallow formats for Sunday.
I haven't played in 10 in a while. I mean, Zach Davies might be available in a league like that. If he is, then yeah, he's probably got to start. Tanner Houck could be interesting, even though he's pitching in Baltimore. If he is in the rotation, according to Roster Resource, they have him throwing that game. He could be the replacement for Eduardo Rodriguez until he's healthy. Other than that, I agree. There's actually a decent number of, I mean, I don't want to suggest it if we get a little deeper, but I mean, you could start Wade Miley in a deeper league, maybe.
a lot of maybes here. Yeah, I don't like it.
It's not a great streaming day because there's actually good, like a lot of teams look like they have either pushed their second best starter to the third game or they have an interesting young guy going who's probably owned in almost every single league.
Here's my problem with streaming people on Sunday. Outside of getting a Brady Singer, he's owned in a decent amount of leagues. So, you know, unless you're in a, you know, 12 team, you might be able to do it. But in deeper than that, I think Austin Gomber has a better chance of pitching better than all these guys. But obviously he has the best chance of getting completely destroyed. Yeah. So again, don't do it. But that's why I'm probably staying away. So, yeah, all in all, target the Rangers. Pick up all the Royals as much as you can because that seems to be the way to go.
Yeah, the Rangers are probably going to be an early target of mine for streaming. The Pirates are definitely going to be one. I know that the Reds have them to start next week. So some of those which I still don't understand why TJ Antone is not starting one of those games, but those guys are all potential, you know, good streaming matchups so far. And we'll get some ideas relatively early on who are some offenses that are better than we think they are. Arizona might be another one that's a team to stream against going forward. But again, that you're going up against a rotation where you're not going to have the option to stream any of those guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think TJ, I think he just hasn't been properly stretched out yet since his hip injury, right? So our groin/hip, he has, I guess, groin injury with a hip setback. So I think that's the issue there. But yeah, that covers. I mean, I know we went over everyone, but hopefully, you know, you want to get off the season on the right foot. Everyone's going to be galaxy braining their lineup. So hopefully, we didn't make it more complicated than it needed to be. Paul, thanks for joining me on the show.
One last quick point. Sorry.
Yeah, go.
I said it because it just popped into my head. I'm sure a lot of people have mentioned it, but if he's available, pick up Chad Green for the first weekend.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I don't know how many, you know, I don't know if you've mentioned it in the past, but he's a, if you, as you can stream relievers, he's the most streamable reliever for week one with Chapman out for the first two games and the rest of the pen pretty much getting arm surgery. So
yeah, I've talked about it on previous shows and over on NBC, but Aroldis Chapman's last outing in the spring, he looked a lot like Rick Ankiel throwing like wild pitches, and I don't know what the heck the problem is. There was no injury, but it was weird, and he is suspended for the first couple of games regardless. Zach Britton's out for a while, so yeah, pick up Chad Green and actually hold on to him for a little bit if you can afford to, because he would be Chad Green would automatically be one of the most valuable relievers in baseball if for some reason he was able to get more than a little work. Yep. So that's a good reminder for the audience. Paul, let everyone know what you're up to at Roto Fanatic, where they can find you on Twitter, and everything that you have planned for the season.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at PMamino Fantasy. Like Matt said, you can find all my work at Roto Fanatic. Last week I had the first of the season GPS location reports on Zach Plesac. Hopefully next week and the season begins, I'm going to have one on Brady Singer, who's actually one of my favorite pitching targets this year. And then during the season, I think we're going to have those run on Thursdays, I think it's going to be, where I'm going to kind of break down a pitcher, depending on what they've been doing well or doing poorly, and take a look at it from a location standpoint and use some of the tools that are hopefully going to one day be included in the Data Monster. And you can find, you know, any questions about the Data Monster, let me know. If you have any questions on how it works, what the prospect model is doing, anything, feel free to reach out to me. My DMs are open. So.
You mentioned the GPS report on Zach Plesac. Spring training stats mean nothing.
Yeah.
Luke Weaver has been getting destroyed, and so has Zach Plesac.
Yeah.
He's given up, I don't want to say nine, I want to say nine home runs.
Yeah. He's been giving up a ton of home runs. I haven't looked into it too much because I try to kind of tune out a lot of that stuff.
That's a lot of home runs.
I'm curious if there's like an active pitch mix change that he's playing with.
He needs to stop it.
Yeah, I'm definitely concerned, but it's a weird thing. I think I saw like all of Cleveland's pitchers are getting like lit up, except for like I think Logan Allen's the only one that was throwing well, and you know Bieber, but we don't have to worry about him. But you know, a lot of those, their fringy guys have been getting kind of hit pretty hard. So I wonder if they're trying something different as a staff. That's a little bit concerning because he's going to have to turn it on when season comes, but I try to ignore it, but it's hard to ignore something like that.
It is. Well, here's the thing is you should ignore it. And he'll go out there and he'll throw whatever, six innings of one run ball on Saturday. And that's the way it'll probably go. But yeah, I mean, if he goes out there and immediately goes all Matthew Boyd on us, we need to dig in a little further. So just something to keep an eye on. Dave McDonald, don't worry. I think it'll be fine. Spring means nothing. So yeah, thanks for listening to the Turn 2 podcast, everyone. I'm your host, Matt Williams. You find me on Twitter at MATTWI77IMS. Find my work over at Roto Fanatic, NBC Sports Edge, and also the Circling the Bases podcast over on NBC. So yeah, cannot wait for baseball to start. Make opening day a freaking holiday for everybody, and can't wait to get started.
My, oh my, put me in, coach. I'm ready to play fantasy. I know I turn two in a day, but the lace isn't hot in my veins. I can turn two in every way, so I turn to you two today and smash play. I'm prepared to listen. The X flipping whip got me looking way past the pitches. Statistics all that I know, and I know that who is on first, he can say I'm ready to go. I ain't trying to steal second or third, cause I wanna win first. How am I to put all of these numbers to words? I know the terms from A to Z, it's like a gift and a curse. I know the difference between a splitter and a curve, but if I can't put it in the points, man, then what's it worth? I need the truth, I need knowledge. Found this podcast with all of it, but what they call it? Turn two, turn two, turn two, what it do? Win leagues, catch out.